everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Backwater Entrepreneur. My name is Jack, and I'm your host, and this is a podcast and show that guides your business from the backwaters to the global marketplace. It's time for another special episodes. As you know already, in special episodes, I bring on guests. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Roger Edwards, a marketing specialist from the UK, who I met on a conference in Belgrade. He was super excellent. And we're going to talk about marketing, about simplifying marketing, and all the cool things that we should know both as small businesses and as big businesses in order to make our lives a little bit easier and a little bit better and make our results better. So, Roger, thank you very much and welcome to the show.
Hi, Jack. Thanks very much for having me on your show. I'm really looking forward to this chat.
Fantastic. And Roger, by the way, also has a podcast. It's called Marketing and Finance Podcast. I'm going to put a link below on this video and podcast. So that's why you said, you know, my show, your show, probably. So Roger, I would like you to introduce yourself. So who is Roger Edwards for the audience?
Yeah, well, I'm Roger Edwards, as you said. I'm a marketing guy from Edinburgh. I always describe myself as a marketing guy from Edinburgh. I'm also a yoga teacher and fitness instructor. I do that in my spare time. And as you quite rightly say, I run my own podcast, the Marketing and Finance Podcast. I've been a marketing guy, Jack, pretty much my entire career, coming up for 25 years now. Started off working as marketing roles in small companies. I've worked in big corporates. And about 6 years ago, for various reasons that we might get into in this chat, I decided to leave what I describe as big corporate and set up on my own as a marketing consultant. And at the same time, resurrected my speaking career. And I suppose it's coincidence, isn't it, that I've resurrected my speaking career. I've started to do more speeches and more conferences, and I was invited to Belgrade for the Content Experience Conference, which was a couple of weeks ago. And that's where we finally met in person, although we sort of knew each other from social media in advance of that. And yeah, I love going to conferences, whether they're in the UK or whether they're abroad, and meeting people like yourself, because there's so many great ideas out there that us marketers and us business people can share.
And fantastic. You said you were in marketing for over 25 years, but recently you've been talking about fighting complexity in marketing. So was it always like that? And when did that start? When did you realize that marketing is complex and that most people make it complex?
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, I guess this has been almost like a career obsession with me. Way back when I started, I've always been a clear communicator. I've always liked writing. I've always liked, I was quite into advertising. Even when I was at school, I used to look at adverts and see how they worked and things like that. And I guess that when I started working for companies, especially the bigger companies, and I did work for some big companies quite early in my career, they would do things which would just absolutely baffle me. You know, they would talk in language which was just ridiculous. They would use big management speak buzzwords, and they would write long complicated sentences, and even when they're trying to communicate externally to consumers, maybe even with adverts, they'd often get into really long discussions over the words that they were using, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, I wouldn't be engaged by this advert. I wouldn't be engaged by this piece of copy. It just seemed bloated to me. It just seems complicated. I wouldn't engage with it. And I guess all the way through my career, I've noticed these things. And as I became more senior, I guess, in marketing roles, as I moved from marketing assistant to marketing manager to marketing director, I became more and more obsessed with keeping things simple and making sure that people use language that our customers can understand and language that people would engage with rather than some of this ridiculous management claptrap that tends to, I'll probably start using quite a lot of UK jargon here, Jack. You'll have to pick me up on it if I do. But claptrap just means rubbish, and fighting against that. And I guess as well, you know, when you work in a bigger company, sometimes they start doing things which are more internally focused than they are externally focused. And you do sit there and think, the customer really doesn't care about this. There was the example I used in the speech at the conference in Belgrade, where I described how I was told off by one of my earlier managers when I was a lot younger about two brochures that had been printed by different printers. And effectively, the two brochures were the same color of blue. And the manager said that brochure A wasn't the same shade as blue as brochure B, when in fact, anybody looking at them would have thought these are exactly the same. And he actually pulled out a printer's magnifying glass and made me look at the two shades of blue to prove to me that they were different. And you're sitting there thinking, well, okay, you've made the point that maybe at a microscopic level, these two shades of blue are different, but the customer doesn't care. The financial advisor who was the intermediary for that particular product wouldn't have cared. And yet the company becomes obsessed with silly things like that. And that's not what business is about. Business is about engaging customers and meeting customers' needs. And I guess it just became a bit of obsession from things like that that happened to me as I was developing my career.
Oh, I know a few people that are, you know, exactly like your manager that you describe, and you know who you are. So for the podcast. So when we talk about marketing simplification, what are the main things that we want to focus on as marketers?
I think there are two things here, Jeff, that I would like to talk about. And I suppose one of them is more of a strategic thing. And I shudder to use the word strategy, because I know that the word strategy does tend to make people feel a bit scared. You know, they think about endless meetings and away days and that sort of thing when you mention the word strategy. But strategy, we'll need to talk about that. And then also the elements of communication. I think marketing is it's an academic subject to a certain extent. It's been around for a long time. There's been millions of books written on marketing. You can do degrees in marketing in universities. You can get PhDs and doctorates in marketing. It is quite an academic subject. And of course, you can hire in very expensive consultancy firms like Ernst & Young and Egremont and PricewaterhouseCoopers. You know, those big international marketing consultancies, and by definition they make it quite complicated, partly to justify the gigantic fees they charge, I guess, but it's just the way that it's developed. It's an academic discipline to a certain extent, and therefore you'll get into SWOT analysis, you know, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats, PEST analysis, which is political, economic, social and technology, and you'll talk about Boston grids and Ansoff's matrices and Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And all of these things just sound complicated. And I'm not dissing them from an academic point of view. You know, they can be well worthwhile exercises. But quite a lot of the time, companies dive into all of this academic bloat, and it tends to scare people away. And when people get scared of strategy, they don't do it. And one of the big mistakes that a lot of companies make is they then dive into the tactical elements of marketing without getting the strategy done first. So my big thing with my clients and my consultants is to say, let's do the strategy, but let's do it in a way that isn't complicated. Let's do it in a way that's easy and we can get it done. So I try not to use SWOT analysis, PEST analysis and grids and T's and all or that sort of thing. We might be getting to the same answer, but I've tried to come up with a simplified process of getting people to that answer.
Before we go on to the process, I'm sorry to kind of interrupt you, but because you mentioned you know, very big words, and as you said, marketing is a science. You know, it's an academic science, and there are so many numerous ways to complicate it, as we would say in this episode. But is this marketing simplification only for smaller businesses, or and thus the bigger businesses have to do the SWOT and PEST and all of the bigger stuff to justify, yeah, as you said, whether they're consultants or to their board or to their, you know, target groups or whatever it is? Or can it be simplification also for everybody, for big companies and smaller companies?
I would absolutely love, Jack, to be able to do the simple process, whether the company's got two people in it or whether it's got 2,000 people or 20,000 people. I think you can do it simply. But you know as well as I do that when companies get bigger, you get bigger management teams, you've got shareholders out there who want results. I guess they get to the stage where if you've got the money to spend on a big consultancy firm to come in and do all of that academic stuff, then it sort of, I don't know, it lends more of a justification to the board putting their name behind it. Personally, I've been into and worked with some big companies since I became a consultant, and they've actually quite liked the simple approach that I've taken. But then again, I've also been into some companies who've said, no, we'll have to spend £1 million on PricewaterhouseCoopers rather than £20,000 with you or £10,000 with you, because I think they're getting that big, complicated academic answer that they can get from those big consultancy firms. Personally, I think that comes from a leadership point of view. And if you have a desire to keep it simple, whether you're small or large, then you can overcome that. But it takes probably quite a strong leader to do that. So the ideal world, from my point of view, would be everybody should try and keep it simple. In the real world, though, of course, I think you're absolutely right. It tends to be more towards the small end where people do focus on it being simpler. And then, of course, the big challenge is if you're a successful small company that starts to grow and become more successful and get bigger, then you've got to avoid effectively transforming yourself into the complicated, bigger corporate as you go on.
But what we want to say basically is that in marketing, as in sales, results are what matter. So whether you get results doing the simple things or you get in by doing the complicated analysis, it's all about the results. And if the simple things give you results, which we will show that they can do, let's try the simple things. So you mentioned strategy. So what are the key points in developing a good strategy?
Okay, when I use what I call the goal, offer, activity model, and in reality, it covers all the stuff that you would get from the academic approach. So it's going to get the same answer as a SWOT analysis, PEST analysis. It includes the traditional four P's of marketing, which is price, product, place, promotion, all of those exciting things. But the first thing is to say, what's your goal? And that goal could be to make a certain level of profit, to just bring in a certain level of revenue. It could be that you just want to expand your email list. It could be that you want to have X percent market share. It could be that you just want to have a certain number of paying customers. But a lot of companies just don't even have a goal. Articulate the goal. Use SMART objectives if you want. That's another element of complexity that we could get into. But if you want to have a SMART goal, then have a SMART goal, but have a goal. The second thing is the offer. And this is where you can make it quite simple. Who is your customer? That's the first question. Who is your customer? And really try to work it out and be really pinpoint accurate with it. So don't just say something like everybody who lives in Belgrade between the ages of 25 and 65, because that's most of them. You've got to be specific. It could be a certain postal code area if you're a shop or you're a department store or something like that, or if you're a florist or a hairdresser, or it could be a certain country with a certain age demographic if you're an internet business. But be specific. Know who your customer is. And then secondly, the second question to work out your offer is, what is their problem? What is the issue that they're facing? So if you're a hairdresser, then the issue that most people face is that their hair looks like it needs cutting or it needs shampooing or it needs to be shinier or whatever it might be. If you're a car mechanic, people have cars that have broken down that need servicing. If you're a marketing consultant, people need marketing strategies. But work out what their need is, and then the final question is, how do I solve their problem? How do I meet their need better than anybody else? And actually, if you answer those three questions, you'll come up with a product or a service solution that meets the needs of a specific group of people that you've pinpoint accurately defined, and you'll then have all the stuff that you need to turn it into marketing messages. Because if you know what your solution is, you know why it's better than everybody else, then you've got the basis for moving on to the third stage, which is the activity. And the activity is the advertising, the content, social media, blogs, podcasts, videos, whatever it is. What we would traditionally view, I guess, as marketing, the communications element. I think a lot of the time in the current world that we live in, Jack, is that when people say marketing, they usually just mean the communication bit. I'm an older guy, as you know. I've been around for a little while. And to me, marketing is that whole thing that I've just described. It starts with who's your customer, working it out what their needs are, working out what the solution is, what is the solution and how is it better. Then we can get into the communication. That's all marketing, and we need to do all of that so that we can come up with something that engages the customer and ultimately gets them to buy from us.
I didn't want to interrupt you while you were doing the whole bit, but let's take a couple of steps back and talk about targeting the persona, or developing who is your audience. So are you talking about, you know, a classic developing marketing persona? So my ideal, audience is a guy, Jack, who lives here and there, who is 35 to 36 years old. He has a family, two kids. He works on a C-level position, whatever it is, and he has daily issues, that and that. Or is it something else?
This is interesting. This is one of the areas where I've not actually decided yet where my opinion falls. It's very topical to have an avatar, or some people call it pen portraits. I've heard them say that before, or an ideal customer. And I've been through that. And in fact, I have one written. I actually have two avatars written down for my ideal customers, and I've done exactly what you've just said there. I know the name of the person. One of them's called Steve, the other one's called Dave, and I know where they live. I know how old they are. I know how many children they've got. One of them hasn't got children. I know what rock music they're like. I know what TV, and I think that's quite good. And it can help you get into their head. It might give you an idea of the tone of voice you might want to use when you communicate with them. But then, do you know, sometimes I think it's almost become a cliche, isn't it? Everybody talks about having avatars, and everybody talks about having these focused individuals. I think you've got to have an idea who your ideal customer is, but everybody's unique, aren't they? And maybe getting to your avatar is too specific, and you might just want to say, I want to target people who are 25 to 35 who listen to indie rock music and live in this postcode, and they earn between a certain amount of money, rather than knowing what their wives are called and knowing how many children they've got. So I think you've got to have an idea. You've got to have a general view. And if it helps you to create that avatar and give that person a name, then absolutely ideal. Because let's face it, it's better to do that than it is to say, I'm just going to target everybody in the world, because we know that that's just not a good idea.
Okay, fantastic. Basically, I asked you this in order to tell a story. So I have had a discussion with a friend on avatars, and it's, as you said, it's a divided topic, and it's too most common. Everybody's today using it. You should have an avatar. You have your ideal customer. And let's take your example. So Steve and Dave, and I was discussing this with a friend, and he said, you know, I have my personal, you know, guys, it's Steve and Dave, and I know where they live. I know what they eat. I know how old they are. The only thing I don't fucking know is why the fuck they won't buy my product. You know, so... So basically, it is something that it is maybe too specific, and we should target a little bit, outside of the coloring lines. We should know, I'm in the same problem. So basically, you know what I do. So I sell animation explainer videos. And the most common thing I say to my marketing friends is, my niche is everything. So explainer videos are the one thing that suits every niche. So when I target, you know, I have a multitude of avatars and ideal customers, because I can target the medical industry. I can target any kind of industry. Everybody needs videos. So it's not as simple for people in similar situations with similar products. So basically, we said that the most important key to a strategy is, and we developed the key to it. So we need to have what is our product, we need to have who is our ideal customer, and we need to, I'm going to miss something. We need to know what our activities are. Did I miss anything?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's
okay.
That's about right, isn't it?
Okay, yeah. So, and when we get to the activity points, so the communication, the advertising, the placing of the content, whether it's, you know, text, ads, blogs, podcasts. So there are so many different channels, and especially with small business owners, people start shooting all over the place. So people, you know, immediately say, because they're influenced by everybody, they need to have a website, they need to have a Facebook profile, they need to have an Instagram, they need to have a Twitter, they need to have a blog, podcast, whatever it is. So is there a point in being present everywhere? Or, you know, how do we define the right marketing channel, at least for the beginning?
Yeah, I think that one of the problems that we have as marketers, and I suppose this goes back a bit to what you were just saying there about avatars, is we can't help but bring a little bit of ourselves into our avatars. And we love all of these channels of communication, don't we? We love Twitter, we love Instagram, we love playing with all these new apps that come out, and we'll have a go. And sometimes I think Professor Mark Ritson, who's always worth following on Twitter, he's a marketing professor, he always describes this as market orientation. Sometimes marketers are the worst people because they assume that everybody is going to like what they do. And therefore, if I like Snapchat, for example, then I need to be marketing my business on Snapchat. But the reality is, you shouldn't be everywhere. You should just be where your customer is. And that goes back to, if you have an idea of who your ideal customer is, whether you've gone into that detail that we discussed before, whether it's a little bit more general and high level, you will get an idea of where you should be talking to these people. So, for example, a lot of my customers come from the financial services industry in the United Kingdom, and the Marketing and Finance podcast is predominantly aimed at people who work in financial services. Financial services in the UK, I suspect, in most countries, is very heavily regulated, and therefore there's not a lot you can do on all of these channels before you get into quite a lot of regulatory problems. So I know that I have to talk to people in financial services mainly on Twitter or LinkedIn or via my website. There's no point going on Facebook. They're all putting pictures of their kids and their cats on Facebook. There's no point going on Instagram, because financial services people run out of pictures to put on Instagram after 5 minutes, because it's not that an interesting thing. So I know that Twitter and LinkedIn probably more than Twitter, to be honest, because LinkedIn has got that professional level, I guess, that financial services professional would go for. Now, if I was a cake shop or a restaurant, I would probably have an Instagram account. I'll be posting photographs of all my food and my cakes and my dishes to try to get people to see what they're going to eat. So a lot of it does come back to identifying who your customer is and going to the places that they go. And again, you know, use Snapchat as the example. You know, if your customer base is 65-year-olds plus, you ain't going to be talking to them on Snapchat. If your customers are in their early 20s, then Snapchat might be the sort of place you want to develop some marketing activity. So it goes back to who is your customer. And way back at the start of our chat, Jack, you you asked me about the simplicity of, and I said the first element was the strategic, the academic. The second thing is when we get into all of this communication, because we need to communicate simply with the customer. And if we know who the customer is again, then we can avoid some of the traps that a lot of bigger companies get into. And the first one of those is talking in the language of the customer that you're talking to, as opposed to talking in the language of business. So, you know, you go out with your friends to the pub, you go to have a coffee, you sit there, you don't talk in corporate language, you don't use buzzwords, you don't use the jargon of your industry. You might do that if you were in a meeting room with your colleagues, but when you go to the pub with your colleagues after work, you talk in normal language. And you need to communicate with your customers in that sort of language, whether it's on Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, whether it's on your website, whether it's on your blog, whether it's on your videos or your podcasts or your ebooks or whatever it is. You've got to know, so a lot of it comes back to knowing who your customer is. I think that's what we're saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we mentioned that we need, basically, we're going back to the beginning, and we need to know who our audience is in order to find out what the best channel of communication is, whether it's a website, whether it's social media, whether it's YouTube, or so on. So in marketing, there is two types of marketing. So there is ads and paid marketing, and there is content marketing. And everybody needs to run ads, or most businesses need to run ads. But more importantly, most businesses in today's information overload need to produce content, and that is valuable content. But the pick of which content to produce, and again, I'm going back to the small entrepreneur. This podcast is all about backwater entrepreneurs, people who are targeting the global marketplace, no matter where they are, and starting some sort of business. Usually they're a one-man show or up to a 5 to 10 people companies, maybe bigger, yep. But let's say usually. So what would be the recommendation? So should everybody have everything? So what is the best type of content in your opinion? So what would you recommend to your clients?
Yeah, to a certain extent, it does come back to who the customer is. But if you're purely putting together content, and as you said, content as opposed to out and out promotional stuff. So content could be a blog, or it could be a video, or it could be a podcast like this, and content usually answers the questions that your customers are going to have. So if we go back to the offer, where you know who your customer is, you know what their problem is, and you know why your solution to their problem is better than anybody else's, you'll then know that that customer is going to have a lot of questions about your own product. So they'll want to know what color it is, how much does it cost, how long does it take, how many months do I have to be in, whatever those questions are. There'll be a whole list of different questions depending upon what you do. The answer to every single question that anybody will ever have about what you do could be a piece of content. It could be a blog, it could be a video, it could be a podcast. And I think the absolute starting point is to have almost like a hub, and the hub is your website. It's not on LinkedIn, it's not on Facebook, it's not somewhere else. You've got your own real estate, I guess you would call it, your own place. And on that, you then publish the content in the way that it best meets the need of the customer that you're talking to. Now, some people like to read, some people like to listen, some people like to watch. These days, you can probably do all three, to be honest. You could start with this video, which you're recording now. I know that you're going to turn it into a video and an audio. You could get somebody to transcribe it. You may already have it linked to one of those online transcription services, so you could turn it into writing. So I would probably go for at least a bit of a mix of the three: video, audio, and blog. Sometimes it's just a repurposing of the same content, slightly different. And then regularly and frequently get feedback from your customers. What do they like? What don't they like? What's working? What's not working? And then refine your content as you go forward, so that you're keeping people happy and you're keeping people engaged. And that's one of the beauties of being a small company, is you've got that ability to test it in a real life environment, in a live environment. If you're a big corporate, they're going to say, oh, you know, it'll take us 6 weeks to put a video together, so we've got to be absolutely sure it's going to work. Whereas if you're a small entrepreneur, you can afford to put something up. And if it doesn't work, then take it down and put something else up that does, or leave the old one up, but put up a better one. So I think that the key is to publish, answer the questions. That's the most important thing. Use the content to answer the questions. And then get feedback and refine it if you need to.
I totally agree with you. And especially in the point that, you know, of course, larger companies are going to be more careful about going into different types of content with a longer type strategy. But even for a small entrepreneur, he may feel overwhelmed by the, you know, do I need to keep up with the blogging? Do I need to also produce video? Do I need to produce a podcast? And if I do anything, what I tell my clients and friends is that you need to be consistent. If you take something, then you need to, you know, keep doing it, because only one piece of content will not immediately give any results in that. Now, there is one very interesting thing that you said, and that is communication with the audience. So asking for feedback. And I'm going to ask you, what are kind of the tips and tricks off the top of your head that people can use to kind of activate the audience, to move the audience? You and I both create content, and we know that the audience can sometimes be very, very silent, you know, no matter what you say, you know, please share, like, comment, you know, let me know any questions that you might have, and do let me know any questions that you might have. But, you know, other than that, people say, okay, good job, but they don't leave a comment. They don't actively participate in the activity of the community. So what are the kind of your thoughts and tips and tricks on that?
Yeah, and it's not easy, because you're absolutely right. A lot of people will not reply unless they're upset. And you want to know if they're upset as well as if they're happy. But a lot of people, if they're happy, don't communicate the fact. So you actually just have to go and ask them. For example, with my podcast, and I have to say that I didn't do this at the end of last year because I just ran out of time, but I usually send out a survey every year to my email list, and also I include it within the show. I ask people, here's a URL to go to, and I just ask people a few questions about what they like about the podcast, what they don't like about the podcast, what's working, what's not working. If you could change one thing about the podcast, what would it be? And then I'll probably have to incentivize that survey in some way, Jack. I think 2 years ago I offered, it was a pile of business books. I think there was one of Chris Ducker's books, one of Ryan Hanley's books. And I just said, if you answer the survey, I'll put everybody's name into a hat, draw one out, and whoever it is wins all of these books, and that helps. So I think the year before it was a little bit more bribery. I think it was a crate of champagne or something like that. I think if you give somebody and it's like, please, the danger with that, of course, if you give them an incentive, they'll be nice to you because they want the champagne or they want the books. But I think if you can just nudge somebody, and they'll genuinely be honest with you. But you usually you have to ask, because usually unless people are unhappy, they're not going to tell you. So do some sort of survey. You know, I noticed a friend of mine who also runs a podcast in the UK. She's called Janet Murray. She's a PR expert, and she has a podcast which actually has a wider appeal than mine. Hers is an international audience, so she's got a lot of people listening to her podcast, and she started running not even focus groups, meetups, she calls them, in her local towns. So she'll say, I've seen her tweets, she'll say something like, do you listen to the Soulful PR podcast? If yes, I'm going to be in Basingstoke on the 12th of July, and I'm going to be in X pub. Come along, I'll buy you a drink, and we'll have a chat. Now, nobody might turn up. 50 people might turn up, but you know that whoever turns up in that room is going to give her some feedback on the podcast, and she'll probably take action as a result of that. So I think we just need to ask questions, whether it's via survey, whether it's face to face. If you know their phone number, pick up the phone and chat to them. Get them on Skype. You know, say to somebody, if you give me 15 minutes of your honest feedback about the podcast, I'll give you half an hour of free consultancy, or whatever it might be.
Fantastic. So let's get a little bit more personal. So you run both a podcast and a vlog, as I noticed in the past couple of weeks. So there has been quite a few discussions between audio and video nowadays. Some say that audio is making a big comeback after the radio craze, you know, in the last century. And now then the video started booming in the last couple of years, and there is a statistic that says by 2023 that 80% of all content on the internet will be video. So we're waiting on that. But the podcast is slowly but surely rising. So in your opinion, what is the better option for people who want to do self-promotion, who want to do this type of content that you and me are doing? So is video or vlogging or, audio a better option?
Do you know, this is a difficult one. Personally, for me, I tend to experiment, Jack. I've been experimenting with content for quite a long time. And I guess in my experience, I've been experimenting with audio longer than I've been experimenting with video. So I actually launched my first podcast back in, it was about 2011, and it was actually a fitness podcast. It was called Group Fitness Over Coffee. And if I'm lucky, I'll get round to doing about one episode of it a year. It still is up there, but it's just not something that I keep up with. But it was very useful for me to try out interviewing people, doing solo shows, working out how to do the technology and that sort of thing. And that allowed me to launch the marketing and finance podcast with quite a bit of experience in how audio works. And I sort of developed very quickly what the marketing and finance podcast needed to be, who it was targeted at, what the subject matter was going to be, and what I wanted the action people to take out of it. And you did say something very interesting before. Consistency is absolutely and utterly key. Quite a lot of corporate people who ask me for my help, should we launch a podcast? My answer is usually yes, but they'll want results after 5 or 6 episodes. And I have to say to them, you're going to be in this for the long term. I'd done 30 episodes of my podcast before I got a piece of business as a result of the podcast itself. And I think I'd done 90 odd episodes before I got a sizable, chunky project that was very lucrative in terms of money. So I guess I started with audio earlier, experimented with it, and then worked out a model that works for me and my business. With video, I'm still in that sort of testing mode, and I do two types of video. I do one called Rog Vlog, which is more my experiences, like almost like behind the scenes of my business. So when I went to Belgrade, as you know, I had my camera, I was taking shots, and I created a vlog about my experience in Belgrade at the conference and also exploring that wonderful city. And that's more of a personal thing for me. I also do this thing called Marketing Finance TV, which is more just me talking to the camera and giving marketing tips. And I sort of dip between the two. There might be 4 episodes of Rog Vlog before there's any Marketing and Finance TV, and then there might be 3 or 4 Marketing Finance TVs before the next Rog Vlog. So I guess I've not really decided yet exactly how that's going to work for my business. But it worked in the end for the podcast, and I think that it can work for anybody. I think to a certain extent, you've got to try it and see what your audience wants. The big advantage of audio is that you don't have to show your face. Now, you know, I love video. I've had so much fun creating these vlogs. I'm still not quite sure exactly how they fit yet, which is why I'm still experimenting. I'm absolutely having a load of fun playing with Premiere Pro, Adobe Premiere Pro editing software, and I'm probably spending far too much time playing around with teleportation effects and doubling myself up on screen. It's fun, though. But a lot of people are not comfortable having their face on the screen. You know, there's something about a camera being pointed at you, isn't it? It can make a lot of people just dive for cover. So I think that if you want to communicate and you want to use yourself as the communicator, if you want to build your personal brand for your company or your business, then audio's quite a safe way to start, because you haven't got that extra hurdle to get over of knowing that people are looking at your face. Now, I've always said I've got a face for radio. You know, I've overcome that fear now, and I've started to do video, and I'm enjoying it, and I probably will carry on. But I think that audio can be a safe place to start. The other advantage of audio, of course, is that everybody can listen to audio anywhere. You know, you can be in the bath, you can be driving a car, you can be on the train, you can be on a plane, you can be doing the housework, cooking a meal, you can be anywhere. There are places where you probably aren't going to watch a video. You shouldn't be watching video when you're driving a car. You know, even if you're in the gym on a treadmill or doing the rowing machine, you're not really going to be watching video. It's just not going to work. So I think that if you're getting into content, audio seems to me like a good safe way to get into it, and it's wide appeal because everybody can listen to something where whatever they're doing. That was a really rambly answer, but
but you got there. So, by the way, you made the point, and audio is predominantly coming back just because, you know, people can be more focused on audio. They can, on the other hand, do multiple things. And I'm going to say from personal experience to everybody that is thinking about, you know, whether to go in audio or video. For video, you have to think about a million other things. You have to think about lighting. You have to think about what you're wearing, what is behind you. So, and every other thing that you can possibly think of while doing the audio, you can do it, you know, anywhere. You just have to have a microphone and a recorder, and you have to know what you're talking about. So as well as with the video, even though the video can be a little bit more relaxed in that sort of way, so you have to prepare the content for whatever you're doing. I did find out the hard way, so doing both interviews and, you know, solo episodes, that an interview is easier than an hour interview is easier than a 10-minute solo episode, because in an interview, I say, "Hi, Roger, tell me something about Roger," or "What is your opinion on this?" In a solo episode, it's just you and the mic, and you have to talk something which makes sense in those 10 minutes. And if you don't have good show notes, then you're probably going rambling and finish off with saying something that you didn't want to say. So something like this. But you do have a radio voice as well as, you know, you said a radio face, but I'm going to say you have a radio voice. I've been listening to the podcast, and it's quite a good microphone and a voice.
I think you're absolutely right. Video takes a lot more time. And I quite like to go into Edinburgh itself, and Princes Street Gardens, just below Edinburgh Castle, is a phenomenally great location to do video. And I quite often like to stand with the castle in the background. But, you know, there's been days when I've been in there and I've arrived and there's a guy using a strimmer to cut all the grass and to cut the trees. And then there was another time I was in there and they were drilling a hole in the road to get to the gas pipes. And it was just impossible to film anything because the noise in the background was just awful. Then you'll arrive there and it starts to rain. You know, sometimes you just have to think, no, I'm going to have to pack up and go back home and do it another day. Whereas you're right, if you do audio, you can find a quiet location somewhere, plug your microphone in. You don't have to worry about if there's anybody sat in the background going like this, and you can get it done a lot quicker. But okay. Video is fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. And a lot of people are still primarily going to watch on YouTube. And YouTube is one of the kind of the biggest social networks out there. It's bigger than Facebook. And it's one of it's the second most large search engines. So after Google. So we're coming to the end of the episode, and I'm going to ask you, so what would be your message to all of the backwater entrepreneurs who are developing their business but targeting the global marketplace? And I keep stressing this because even though, yes, of course, this can be listened to by any type of entrepreneurs, you know, who develop local businesses, whatever it is, I myself developed a digital company. My target audience is usually 100 or 1,000 or 2,000, 3,000 miles away, depending on what I'm actually doing at the moment, because of the price range, because of the quality of the product, and where the product is more likely to sell. So what would be your message to the backwater entrepreneurs and the listeners of the podcast?
Yeah, I think beyond the stuff we've already talked about make sure you've got your marketing strategy, and it's a simple marketing strategy, and make sure that you're communicating in the language of your customer. The message has got to be consistency. Show up regularly, whether you're doing a podcast every 2 weeks or every week, or, I mean, some people do it every day. That's probably too much. Once a week. If you say you're going to do it once a week, be there once a week. If you say you're going to be there every fortnight, be there every fortnight. If it's monthly, be there. Always show up. Always be consistent, and always give good quality content. And that consistency needs to take place over a medium to long period. Don't expect success from two or three episodes. You know, expect to take, I think Mark Schaefer is said something like 30 months is the minimum for a piece of content to really dig itself in and become established, and that's quite a long time. You know, it was 30 episodes of my podcast before I got business from it. It was 90 episodes before I got a massive piece of business. So show up consistently, give people quality, and keep it simple. I think that's what I would say.
And strategize.
And strategize, absolutely right. But don't use the word strategy. Goal, offer, activity.
Goal, offer, activity. Fantastic. And that's the end of our podcast. Roger, thank you very much for being a guest on the Backwater Entrepreneur Podcast and Show. I hope we'll meet again soon, and or that you will come again on the show with another, you know, topic.
Been absolutely great to speak to you again, Jack. It was great to meet you in person. Let's keep in touch. We've got lots more things we can talk about in future.
Fantastic. And guys, thank you very much for tuning in into this podcast episode. As ever, if you like what you hear, like, share, comment, you know, contact me. If you have any questions or give me feedback, I'll try to, you know, arrange my topics in the following weeks in order to answer your questions. And do let me know. And I'll see you again on the next episode of the Backwater Entrepreneur.